Welcome, everybody. Most of you know me. I'm Dr. Brian Walsh, and I'm the chiropractor and natural health guru kind of guy. And tonight we're specifically going to talk about brain health and all the things that affect that. And then at the end we'll have a question and answer if I don't answer your questions. But this is, I would compare this to like a tsunami of a health problem that's coming on us, I believe. You've got this huge population of baby boomers, right, that are aging, and some of them aren't aging very well, and it's going to increase over the next 10 to 20 years, they believe. And there's some things that you can do proactively that, especially the earlier you do it, the much better chance you have of avoiding any of these really like dementia type symptoms and things that are really troubling as we get older. And the sooner you get to that, the better, you know, the better that you get to that. I always like to start off with my talks with this because it embodies how I look at kind of health. So the doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will interest his patients in the care of the human frame and diet and in the cause and prevention of disease. Right? That was by Thomas Edison, like 100 years ago. So he really had a holistic way of looking at things, you know, the overall picture, basically. And because he saw the importance of the human frame, because the spine protects everything, all the nerves and everything. And the diet, which should be the foundation of our health, you know, but it's kind of gone the opposite way. It's actually the detriment to our health many times. And then cause and prevention, right? Because once you know, I was an engineer for 10 years before I was a chiropractor. And we were always taught to find the problem, right? You find the cause of that problem and you'll fix the circuit. You'll fix whatever it is that's not working right. And then preventing things. So we that latter two parts we haven't gotten real good at in traditional medicine because we're good at surgery and drugs, but not so much the cause and prevention. And so and that's what I'm all about, having my engineering background, is getting to the cause and then trying to prevent it. So there's estimates that they believe that like up to 20% of the population can suffer from some kind of neurological issue. And this it's a broad spectrum. It could be things like cerebral palsy, dementia, stroke, brain injuries, Parkinson, tumors, all those type of things when you group them together. But that's a lot, like one in five people can be impacted by these different things, some worse than others. Alzheimer's, right, which is a biggie, everyone's like, no one wants to get that. It's right around the sixth leading cause of death now. So that's pretty troubling. And like I said, I believe it's going to be a wave. It might get better, worse if we don't get on it, like proactively. In the past 15 years or so, they've gotten better at helping like heart disease people, right? They're still getting heart disease too much, definitely, but the death rates have gone down about 10% because they're getting better at treating them, the bypasses, all that stuff, right? But in that same time frame, Alzheimer's/dementia has gone up like 120%. So that's like the radical difference over the past 10, 15 years. And like I said, it's going to get worse if we don't do something. They estimate when it comes to that dementia realm, like 1 in 10, if you're just looking at the dementia, like 1 in 10 people over the age of 65. So again, alarming statistics that we want to do something with when we're younger. The other big thing is this can be very crippling economically, right? They estimate right now, because of the cost of caring for people that have all these conditions and stuff, it's somewhere in the ballpark of like $250 to $300 billion a year. I mean, that's huge, and they just think it's going to get worse. So it's not really a minor problem. You know, this is like a big deal. Some of the signs to look out for, right, when stuff is happening. Inability to concentrate, just not being able to focus. Memory is kind of a big one that a lot of people pick up on. We're going to talk about other reasons why these things can happen, but these are some of the things you need to look out for. Forgetting how to do things. So there's one thing, like you forgot something. You forgot where your keys were or something like that. But then what's even more troubling is forgetting how to do processes, like tie your tie, right? Do a checkbook. Those kind of things, that's a much more troubling sign that something's going on in the brain that's not very good. This happens usually more earlier on, but mood and behavior problems. Some folks, when they have these beginning signs of dementia and these different things, their mood starts changing quite a bit. And that might be the first sign that something's going on. The other thing is, this is more on the like logical thinking kind of side, critical thinking, not being able to plan things as well as you used to, hard time calculating. I mentioned the checkbook, right? When people have a hard time like reconciling and doing, it's like those executive functions in the brain are connecting. So these are just little warning signs that the sooner you catch these things, the better you can start doing something proactively about it. There's several theories about how all this, like, why is this happening so much, right? Why is this happening, especially in America, because we got all this great healthcare, right? And some of this information I've gotten from a book by Dale Bredesen is his name, a doctor, he's an MD. The End of Alzheimer's is the name of the book, came out, I think, a couple of years ago. Very good book. He's very comprehensive about how he approaches Alzheimer's. He's actually created a training program for medical doctors that he trains his protocol. A very all-encompassing, many different aspects of helping the person and figuring out what the cause of it is, as opposed to just treating symptoms. Bredesen, I believe it's Bredesen, Bredesen. But if you Google The End of Alzheimer's, the book, he's the only one that's done that. So there's these different things you've heard, like with Alzheimer's and dementia, they get this, it's a form of like plaquing that can happen around the brain, right? But they found that that's not the only thing, because some people have the plaquing, but they don't have the dementia. So that's not like a death sentence, in other words. There's this balance that happens, just like in your bones, you have cells that build up the bone and cells that tear down the bone. You actually have a similar process going on in the brain, where you have cells that clean up and do different things that are positive for the brain, and then these other cells that break down tissue. And ideally, it's a cleanup type routine, right? But evidently, there can be this imbalance where you're actually getting more of this breakdown activity happening, and it kind of goes awry and it's overboard. And the good guys that are supposed to be building things aren't doing their job as well. So there's that balance that's gotten out of balance, basically. One is what they call atrophic, which means you're not getting the right nutrients to your brain, whatever they may be, and I'll talk about the ones. You actually have a deficiency of nutrients to the brain that are causing it not to work the way it should. The most common is B12, right? Some, especially older folks, they don't absorb B12 as well, and so you can cure some people's dementia problems because they have a B12 deficiency. That's like the perfect cause and fix, you know, because that's very easy. You can usually catch it with an easy blood test, and but that can actually cause dementia-like symptoms in older folks. A simple B12 issue. And then some people, for various reasons, diabetes is one of them, blood flow is not adequate to the brain. So they're not getting a good amount of oxygen that's going in there, cleaning things up, and getting lots of nutrients and blood supply. Those are like some of the big ways why they think when those things aren't working right, it gets out of balance and you get some symptom like Alzheimer's, dementia, something else. Different things that can lead to these things. Some people don't realize that, especially if you've had more than one form of brain injury from concussion or those type of things. Those can have very lasting effects. And anytime you have a concussion, and the more you get, it increases your risk of dementia type problems. There's blood flow things that happen there, and you can actually get brain damage depending on how bad the impact was. So trauma is a risk factor for brain decline as we get older. Also, that's another thing, and this can happen to young people too. Some people, if they have really bad concussions, they will start getting the mood disorder problems. And especially in the younger people, they think they're being, you know, just rebellious or whatever, but it can actually be as a result of the brain trauma, that their body did not recover well, and that trauma actually caused the centers that control moods to be out of balance. That's always something to look for after somebody has trauma, especially like a bad car accident, because that can definitely happen. And sometimes it's the spouse that is actually picking that up. You know, that this my husband, my wife, not the same since that car accident. So sometimes that'll cause it. Sometimes infections, right? At a real bad case, you can get these strange bacterial and viral infections that actually attack the brain tissue. And medicine, if it's bacterial, they can usually help that quite a bit. If it's viral, not so much. But those kind of things can be ruled out too. And there's natural ways to do some of that, and there's some medical ways to do that too, to help with any kinds of infections. I mentioned the nutritional deficiencies, that can be a biggie. Something that is more common as our country's got so polluted are these various toxins, right? Like mercury and lead and arsenic and formaldehyde chemicals, you know, that are in building materials and new flooring and your cars, that wonderful new car smell. It's actually really toxic for your brain, like really bad. And so those kind of things over time, some people don't get rid of them well and they build up and they can cause your brain not to work well. We've helped lots of people with their brain work better by detoxing them and getting that bad stuff out. The other one is, you've heard of good fats and bad fats. If you don't have enough of the good ones, especially the omegas from fish and nuts and seeds, those type of things, you need those to keep your brain functioning and balanced. And a lot of people, depending on their diet, they don't get a lot of that, enough of that. This is a biggie, again, especially the past year. Stress, there's a very high correlation between stress and memory. The higher the stress, the more it impacts your memory. So whenever somebody comes to me with memory problems, I always quiz them about their life, their work life and family life, to see if they've got some form of chronic stress that's always at them. Because your brain cells, the way they work, there's little connections and chemicals that take place to make that memory connection. And the hormones from stress make that connection not happen as well. So you actually can't form memories as well when you're under lots of stress. So those kind of things can build up over time. And then this is another one I always quiz folks about, is sleeping problems, right? When you start consistently getting below 7, especially below 6 hours of sleep a night, part of that, what they found is part of the wonderful thing that happens in sleep is your brain does this cleanup thing, right? And these certain things happen in the brain which allow it to flush bad stuff that's not supposed to be there. And it's like a great repair time, not only for the rest of your body, but for the brain too. So the less time you get in that mode, then it's not doing its job as well, and it can actually not work as well because it's not getting the sleep time and repair time, basically, that it needs.
How about if you're doing naps? If you don't get 7 hours and you do a nap during
that? Yeah, so I'm not sure if that's enough to make up for it. Mm-hmm. That part I haven't read, mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that helps or not. I know they have shown that like the siesta in the afternoon does help with like heart disease and heart attack type things. The countries that do that tend to have less of those kind of problems. But I'm not sure how that works on the brain, if it makes up for the lack of nighttime sleep, consistent sleep. Some other things, these are medical things, like if you have thyroid problems, especially a hypothyroid where it's not working well. Because of the way it links to almost all parts of your metabolism, that can also make the concentration and the memory like not very good. I mean, it just really messes up the brain function. Women especially, but it can happen in men, if they're having hormone shifts. Many times when they go through that perimenopausal, menopausal time frame and they stop having cycles, women can have a lot of cognitive stuff where their mood changes and their focus is just not as good as it used to be. And a lot of times that means they're missing certain things or like the adrenal glands aren't functioning as well. But that's also something to consider when people are going through these brain stuff. They found that folks that are depressed or anxious have a much higher rate of cognitive, more chance that you're going to have those type of things. So another reason to try to be proactive with that. And then I mentioned it earlier, because diabetes affects the blood vessels a lot, that's everywhere, right? And that means the brain too. So you want to always, because it puts you at higher risk for plaquing in the arteries, including your brain, and oxygen levels not quite as good. And the higher your blood sugar, the more toxic that is to your tissue, including your brain tissue. So that's another reason to be proactive with that. So it's pretty interesting. He talks about it in the book. When it comes to medications, not very good, right? This is one area where they have just pretty much failed miserably. They have a couple drugs, Namenda and Aricept, I think is the name of it, that sometimes can delay stuff, but usually within 5 years, they're not working very well, at the most, usually. So those are not a cure-all at all, and they're just not that good. They have actually had trials on over 100 medications for Alzheimer's and dementia, because they know it's like an incredible market if they actually found something that worked, because it would help lots of people and make them lots of money, which they like. But because what he points out in the book, that Dr. Bredesen, in medicine, they're always trying to find one thing that they can alter, right? Some pathway or something like that. And they've been going along these certain lines with these drugs, and they've just not been effective. Dr. Bredesen's approach is the exact opposite. He's looking at all the factors that influence how the brain can be damaged or affected. Some of them I've already mentioned. And that you have to have a multifactorial approach. He actually approached the American Medical Association with his, he had done lots of case studies of people he had turned around that already had Alzheimer's, people that he helped get better, maybe not 100%, but a lot better. And he presented his system to the AMA. And they basically laughed at him and said, there's no way we can study that. There's too many things you're doing at one time. And he's like, yeah, like that's the point. And we're addressing all the problems, not just one problem. And so they basically said, you know, forget it. There's no way that we're even interested in looking at something like this. So that's why he started his own training program for doctors. So there's actually doctors around the U.S. now that are have learned his system of evaluating and treating. And it's pretty cool. It's very holistic and natural. It's not cheap, but it's good. It's a very thorough, one of the best approaches to handling it from a medical standpoint. Because he's doing it holistically.
Do you know anything much about the over-the-counter, the Prevagen that I see on television?
Yeah, so that Prevagen does have some studies behind it that shows it can help memory. I'm not sure much more than that. I'm not sure actually the mechanism of how that works. I've not studied that particular supplement. There's lots of them that we're going to talk about that do help, though, that has other studies behind it. But it's all about the cause, right? Getting to the cause. Because if there's nutritional deficiencies, then you have to correct those. If they have toxins in their body, you have to correct those. If they're stressed out all the time, they have to break that pattern, because they just won't get as well as they're going to get. If they're not sleeping, you got to sleep. You know? So it's all about, if you get to the cause, then people get better, you know? So when you start treating those things that get identified, then things start to change. And he's got some really cool case studies in the books of some people that turned around dramatically once they got those types of things. So there's different things you can do when it comes to a testing standpoint. One of them is, I mentioned, the fatty acids, the good omegas. You know, there's actually a way to test that that's pretty reliable now. And it's a blood spot test that you do, you know, like a finger prick, and you send it in. And it tells you the amount of your good oils and not so good oils. And they found that there's a very high correlation between your focus and cognitive function and your omegas being high. And so that's actually a test you can get online. I think this year I'm going to try to bring it into the office so it's available for people. It's not even that expensive. And then there's different brain programs, training things you can do with the brain to actually help it work better too. So there's some stuff, neat stuff that I'm looking at bringing into the clinic this year that can help that whole, where's your brain at, and then how can we make it better, you know, type thing.
Sign me up.
Yeah, that's right. Science, send me up. Simple blood tests that can be done for this. C-reactive protein is a non-specific inflammatory marker, but the higher that is, then you have more chances of having brain health problems. Homocysteine is another one. Again, that's more specific for the arteries, but if your arteries aren't good here, they're not good in your brain either. So these are all the same. Vitamin D is a simple one. The lower your vitamin D, the more likely you're going to have brain issues. So that's a really easy one. I mentioned the B12. The other one is a simple CBC, a complete blood count, to make sure you're not borderline anemic or anemic, because if you're anemic with low B12 or iron, then your brain will not work very well because you're not getting enough oxygen to it. So that's, again, a simple one. There's one called BDNF. That's B as in boy, D as in dog, N as in Nancy, F as in Frank. It stands for a really long word. But it's a blood test you can do, and it's this factor in the brain, and depending on where that is, kind of gives you an idea if you're more at risk for having trouble down the road. I think it's brain-derived neurotrophic factor or something like that. I can't remember the full name, but it's a good one to help rule out where you are, if you're in trouble or not. And then the other one, this is more specific for Alzheimer's. It's APO4E, APO4E gene that there's different manifestations of it. So you might just have one of them or you might have both of them. If you've got like the full, what they call expression of it, then you are at much higher risk of getting dementia of some form. So if you knew that when you were in your 40s, then you could do lots of proactive stuff to make sure you didn't go down that road. So, and that's kind of what he talks about in the book, that a lot of this stuff should be done like no later than your 40s, so that there's lots of time to be proactive. Because some of the people that come to him are in their 60s, 70s or more, and they're already in trouble and they're trying to get better. And much, much harder to fix them, right? So much better if you're in your 40s to start doing some of this stuff. There's some cognitive tests you can do online, you know, that you can Google different brain tests that just check your overall ability to remember and to do certain functions. And some of those are getting better and better at those, at making them, it kind of gives you an idea if you're starting to have trouble in certain areas. Because sometimes it's subtle and you don't realize it, especially with the memory and those kind of things. But so those are some of the blood things that you can do. I use the muscle testing, you know, the nutrition response testing to see if any of the toxins are in your body, if there's food sensitivities, because if you're reactive to gluten and you eat a lot of it, that can definitely mess with your brain. There's no doubt about that. Any food sensitivity or allergy can make you not think well for some people. And then ruling out any things like thyroid problems, adrenal gland problems, all those kind of things, you know, get your diabetes under control, all of that is really important to get like over the hump. When it comes to the food and the diet, you know, when it comes to the diet, the basic thing of like a paleo style diet, which is real food without processed stuff, that doesn't have a lot of packaging, even though they're really getting good at some of this paleo stuff that's actually ready, you can ready mix it and stuff. I mean, it's getting really better. But it's really getting away from the processed stuff. Just food the way it used to be, basic food, and no low sugar, you know, high good oils, low bad oils, getting rid of food sensitivities, making sure your immune system and your hormones are balanced, because like I said, that can really throw off that whole cognitive function thing. And then if there's on the stress side, like high intensity interval training is like one of the best ways, if it's okay for your joints, for calming down your stress hormones. But simple relaxation techniques, which anybody can do with deep breathing and these different things, are very effective at lowering cortisol, right, and getting that down, because that's the one that's kind of toxic to your brain. Those are like the self-help things you can do. When it comes to a supplement standpoint, there are some things that have been shown to help this. I mentioned the fish oils or flax oils, those type of things. They can definitely make a difference in how well your brain works. I mentioned the B vitamins, especially B6, B12, and folic acid. Folate, those are like the biggies, the most important, but they're all important. Making sure you have enough of those. There are certain herbs that have been shown to help your cognitive function. One called Bacopa has some good research behind it with helping with like cognition and memory. This is a long one. This is a component that's in your brain, but sometimes it can decline. It's called phosphatidylserine. That can help. It, one of the ways it works is it helps lower your cortisol levels, and it can help your memory and the focus be a little more active.
Can you
spell that one for the phos? Yeah. So phosphotidylserine. Phosphotidylserine. no shortening that one. This is a plant, rhodiola, has lots of history behind, especially for people that have a lot of stress and they're go. Really good for like type A people. The rhodiola can help stamina, it helps calm the adrenal glands down, and overall mental performance is usually a little better with it. There's one that's similar, it works more with the thyroid and adrenal, is ashwagandha. And again, that works more on the stress angle, but it can be very effective to calming the body down and calming the brain down. These are ones that are more anti-inflammatory, curcumin or turmeric. You know, turmeric is the spice and curcumin is the extract from the turmeric spice. Rosemary has been shown in tests by just smelling it. It can help depression. Like almost immediately. People just start feeling better. Just from smelling the oils. Boswellia, the other name for that is frankincense. Right, that's a common essential oil that people use a lot. Ginger, again, that's more like a natural anti-inflammatory. And sometimes if you've got like overall inflammation in the body, which isn't good for your brain either, they make these things called systemic enzymes, which you take on an empty stomach, but they help break down bad stuff in your body. Sometimes they can help break down the plaque, but it reduces overall inflammation and like adhesions in your body, can help with muscle stuff. But those are what they call systemic enzymes on an empty stomach, as opposed to digestive enzymes, which are more for food. And then I mentioned if there's hormone imbalances, like I'm not a fan of doing a lot of hormone therapy. I rather try to fix it with diet and herbs and vitamins and that kind of stuff, and cleaning up the toxins out of people's bodies and seeing if that works first. There are some folks that need hormone therapy, like natural, you know, bioidentical hormone therapy, because sometimes that will be a lifesaver for them. But ideally they would need it for a while and then hopefully back off over time. Because whenever you take hormones for long periods of time, especially if we're older, sometimes they cause problems, right? That's where some of the breast cancer stuff comes from women taking too many hormones for too long a time, you know, when they're in menopause. So I reserve that more for if other things don't work as good as we want them to, then do the hormone therapy. But sometimes you can't avoid it. If someone has a hysterectomy, if a woman has a complete hysterectomy, they have to do hormone therapy for a while if they're still in that cycle time. Or else they'll just fall off the deep end if they don't get hormones. You know, that really impacts them very badly. So it's more that overall look, you know, the overall picture is what we're looking at. Lower the stress, start sleeping, get rid of the toxins, eat real food. All those things, when you start combining them together, then it gives the body a chance to repair itself, to get back to the way it was. And it takes the things that were assaulting you, you know, out of the picture. Because once you get rid of those, and people just, they come back to life again. I remember I had this one gal, she was in her late 30s, early 40s. She had 3 kids. She came to me and she was like this close from moving back in with her parents because her work was like being really impacted and she was getting concerned about taking care of her kids because her memory was getting so bad and she wasn't able to do stuff. And so we did the muscle testing stuff on her, and she had like some of the most toxins I'd seen in a person, heavy metals and environmental chemicals and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was really bad. And we put her on a detox program. And within like 3 months, she was like, I don't have to worry about that now. I don't have to worry about moving back in with my parents because my brain came back to function. The people at work weren't worried about her and concerned about, you know, whether or not she could work anymore. So for her, the big thing was the toxins. They were just really messing up her brain. And she wasn't that old, you know, late 30s, early 40s. But she could have been one of those folks if something hadn't been done, then she just would have went down that nasty path of maybe early dementia that happens to some people. So sometimes it's simple and you can really get to something and people turn around like really quickly. That's the ideal scenario. And again, earlier than later, right? And he really stresses that in the book, that end of Alzheimer's, that really, when you're young, get tested. Start doing stuff that gives you an idea of how your brain is, that APOE4E gene test. if either one of your parents had some risk factors, there's a possibility you got both of their risk factors and now you're at higher risk, right? So if you know that ahead of time, then you know, okay, I need to be proactive, I need to eat well, I need to have good omegas in my body and vitamins and all that stuff, so that you don't go down that road. You know, the genes don't mean that you're going to get whatever that is, right? It just means you're at higher risk. And how you live and what you do is how it's going to manifest. They've shown that lots of studies with twins, you know, and they had different lifestyles, and one was fine and the other one wasn't, you know, because they had a horrible lifestyle. So that's the big part I like to, that genes aren't your destiny, you know, but they're it could be a warning sign to be proactive and not become, you know, a victim of those genes by doing good stuff instead of bad stuff. I think that's pretty much it. Does anybody have any questions?
I do. You know, the big thing, you know, the Wi-Fi and 5G and whatnot. What are your thoughts on all those? How does that affect?
So here's my opinion of all that. So yes, we have a question about Wi-Fi and 5G. You know, compared to 100 years ago, our level of background radiation is quite high. There's no doubt about that. You just look at the towers everywhere. And there's still lots of debate about the long-term ramifications of that. What I have found, that the best antidote or protection against that is to be as healthy as you can be. Because what I found in the past 20 years of doing this is that the sicker the person is, the more they're affected by this Wi-Fi stuff. Because there are people, they'll be on their computer and an hour later they're just tanking because they're really being affected by it. But the healthier the body, it's able to tolerate it better. There's certain things, and the more heavy metals that are in your body, that seems to affect people worse as well. They've actually got clothing now that you can wear. So like if I was someone that was in a high-tech environment and you're in a room where you worked with a lot of computers or servers or that kind of stuff, where you've got lots of EMF. They have these undergarments now that you can wear that are actually quite protective. They make all these pendants and all these different things you can wear. And the technology on that is, it's supposed to harmonize the fields. So I'm not sure exactly if those work. I really don't know. I do know, though, that those undergarment clothing things do, because it's actually creating basically like a little, it's like a mesh metal, very fine, you know, that you're wearing, and it actually blocks signals. So those can actually work. And you can actually get tenting material to go around your bed, because that's another good time. You like to not have all that stuff hitting you, you know, from your neighbor's Wi-Fi and the tower around the corner. There's actually tenting you can get now around the bed that can actually block a fair amount of that. That's the best way. And hopefully they'll get more of that and a better technology so it becomes cheaper. But they do make that stuff now.
But the Wi-Fi and all that is not going to get any better because they're going to keep adding that improve the technology.
Yeah.
I know my friend, he's arguing with me all the time. Move the phone from your bed. Don't be keeping the phone in the room.
Yeah.
Drop down whatever it is you have that runs your Wi-Fi in the house. I'm like, that means every day I've got to turn that thing back on.
Yeah, that's true.
You know. And then my other question, because you talked about, you know, in the brain injury and whatnot, it's really funny you mentioned that, because I'm actually going through this with my son. He just recently had a seizure, and out of the clay, and then we started going back, it's like, oh my God, you know, this, because he had really serious head trauma when he had the accident.
Mm, yeah.
And, you know, for the past, it's not that you're saying, everything is coming to me and making sense what you just said, because it's like, his mood swing, he's like, oh, he's grumpy all the time.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God. So anyway, we went to the doctor, he was taken to the hospital, and so now we just got back the other results when they did the brain thing, and they're seeing a lot of abnormalities.
Yeah.
So they want to put him on this med, and I'm like, oh my God, I start reading about the med. I'm like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so that book, The End of Alzheimer's, he's got good stuff about all the nutrients, you know, that are helpful. For that kind of, I mentioned some of them, the oil, you know, the fish oils and that phosphatidylserine, good vitamin C, a good B complex. all of those things are going to be more nutrition for the brain to help it function better.
Would it improve?
Oh, it can. It can.
It's still pretty young.
It depends on the amount of injury he had. But yeah.
The injury where they said his brain shifted a little bit in the accident.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. That it can be very bad. Mm-hmm. Mm. They're also at higher risk for seizures, like you mentioned, when they have brain injury. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you touched on the mood thing, and I was like, oh my God, I can see that.
Yeah, that's probably what's happening.
Always seems a little agitated. Mm. Oh, no. The simplest little things.
Yeah, and most of them don't even know that it's happening.
Oh, they don't know either.
They don't realize it.
How about sleeping? Sleeps a lot, every chance you get.
Yeah, so that's the other factor. With brain injury, they either sleep too much or not enough. It can go either way.
Oh, sometimes you'll get in the car, and he'll just, like, out.
Yeah.
But if he's driving, he'll be okay, I guess. The big concern now is, like, do we really want him driving?
Right, yeah.
Because you never know when this is going to happen.
That's tough. Yeah, that's not... Mm. Brain injury is a tough one. It's not a good area.
Right.
Especially, like, these football players, right? Multiple concussions. I mean... Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Any other?
One quick thought. You mentioned that naps may or may not be helpful, but you say 6 to 7 hours at that. Is it continuous or cumulative, or is that yet unknown?
That part I'm not sure about. Most of it that they looked at was the normal sleep time, you know, your nighttime sleep hours. And when that drops below like 6 hours consistently, that's when you start having more problems. So I'm not sure how the napping works into that, if that's adequate. It definitely helps with stress and heart problems, because they've done studies on that, napping in the afternoon, like a 15-20 minute nap. Actually can help decrease heart attack risk over time. But I'm not sure about the brain. And ideally, you'd have a certain amount of, you know, 1 to 2 hours, ideally, of deep sleep and REM sleep. And if you're not getting into that deep sleep a lot, that's another problem.
So if you get into the deep sleep, that's good.
Yeah.
But if you just kind of sleep in and...
Yeah, if you don't get there long enough, they've found that that's not, you don't get that good healing effect when you're not in that deep phase for at least an hour, preferably two or more.
Mm-hmm. But any other thing? That concerns me. And I keep telling myself there's nothing wrong. But it's like, for instance, I'll see someone, I'm like, I know that person. I just can't remember their name. And I don't know this person 100 years, but I can't remember their name.
Right.
I did that the other day, but still, I was trying to remember.
Yeah, ideally we'd hold on to that, ideally. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a slight bit of memory issues that can happen. You know, it's usually past our 70s that can start happening, that we do lose some, because we are not going to last forever, and on this earth anyway. And but when it's happening when you're younger, you know, 50s, 60s, then it's a little more troubling. And that's where these other things, you know, to be proactive with the sleep and the exercise and the relaxation and good nutrients and good food can help.
I see a little different, because I have just started taking B12.
Okay.
And I think I'm seeing a little difference than how I was a few weeks ago, when I was just so tired and agitated and whatnot. Now I would have gone out.
Yeah, some people, it's dramatic. Yeah, they have a great change. Mm. Like I said, the classic sign is someone in their 70s and they look like they're getting dementia. It's just a little B12. You put them on B12 and they come back. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect fix.
So for the toxins that are in the body, how often should you be detoxing?
So you can have an accumulation over time, right? If you have mercury fillings and your body doesn't get rid of that stuff, it can accumulate over many years. But you can usually go through a detox program that works well. That'll get rid of it in 3 or 4 months usually. And then a good idea is, like, once a year at least, to do some form of anywhere from a 2 to 4 week detox type thing. And, I mean, a good way to do it every day is by what you eat, right? Berries, you know, greens, The cruciferous vegetables, you know, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, all that stuff. Those help the liver detox. That's kind of what they do. And so if you, and that's part of what we think is, with people being so toxic, besides we get too much of it in the environment, is people aren't eating enough of the foods that detox our body naturally, which is vegetables and fruit, really. That's the main thing that, that detoxes our body, is vegetables and fruit. They bring what?
Gas.
Okay. Well, there's other reasons. There's other reasons for that. So that just means something's out of balance. Yeah. And again, ideally those would be organic fruits and vegetables, so you're not putting more poison back in your body. That's the other problem, right? A lot of our produce is wrecked. So I tell people it's work to be healthy anymore. It's not like it was 100 years ago, where most everything was natural. Now it's actually work to be healthy.
Now, how do you tell when something is organic versus, you know, I can't tell.
Yeah, so on produce and fruit, besides it saying in the thing, there's a 9. When you look at the code, there's a little code on the sticker.
Now I'm saying, like, besides those stickers, because
right.
Anybody can slap a sticker. I want to know how to really tell. And
that's definitely. Yeah, then you can't. Other than it comes from an organic farm, you know, that's you're trusting the food chain that they brought you something that was organic.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I always wonder about that.
Yeah.
And salmon, big salmon. So which is the best? Is it the wild salmon?
Yeah, it's always the wild. Yep.
The wild salmon is the best.
Because there's real question about what they feed them,
mm-hmm.
in these feeding pens, these farm raised ones, and. If you buy a farm raised salmon, you'll notice that they say there's some dye to enhance color.
Mm-hmm.
So when salmon have their natural diet, it's crustaceans and these different things that turn the meat that color, reddish, kind of nice looking.
Mm-hmm.
If they're farm raised, they don't have that. So they have to give them dyes and these stuff in their food to make the meat look like the wild ones. So it says it right on the package for the farm salmon. So nature is always best, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
It's always the best. Anything else?
I'm still gonna go back to that cross-protein salmon.
Right.
I'm not sure if I got that spelled correctly.
Yeah. I can show you the spelling. Yeah, that one's really good when it comes to protecting.